Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
What's up, everybody? We're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which can be found on Twitter at Zone Coverage. And man, I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And it is day two of a two-part podcast series. We're talking about free agents and where they're going to land. We have our very own, I shouldn't say our very own, we don't have you contractually obligated to appear, but John Becker at John_Becker on Twitter. John, what's going on today?
Not much. About the same as yesterday, and ready to get going with the top half of our free agent list.
Yes, and if you're listening today and have not listened to the previous episode in which we detailed free agents number 16 to 30 on John's list, I would highly recommend listening to that first. That way you can see who got snubbed from our list and all that sort of things, or John's list as it was. I'm not taking any responsibility. You can get the hate mail, John. but we're going to dive right in. First and foremost, Shohei Ohtani, who's going to be the number one person on our list, spoiler alert, is posted. He's officially posted. Are you expecting 30 teams to put up $20 million to negotiate with this cat?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if not. Even though we've heard some more teams connected a little bit more heavily, I think that the $20 million posting is not going to be an issue for any and all of the 30 teams to put that in and start negotiating really right away.
Yeah. Well, we obviously have teams we think will be in the mix there more so than others. We kind of alluded to that in the previous edition of this podcast, but we'll get to him towards the end of the show. The other thing that we have to tackle before we dive into player number 15 on your list, John, is that Wellington Castillo has signed a deal, not with the Oakland A's, as I think you and I had both suspected, but it was a team that we both concurred was a very good fit.
Yep, and it was the Chicago White Sox, so 2 years, $15 million, and good fit for them, rebuilding. Castillo's framing numbers went up considerably this past season. Always been a very good hitter. Good pop that should only play up even more at a guaranteed rate field. I almost said the cell, but guaranteed rate field, where he will, in all likelihood, be their starting catcher, probably hit somewhere in the middle of their lineup, and help out the young staff of pitchers.
Really not a bad fit. Probably will be tandem with Omar Narvaez or Kevin Smith. I suspect Narvaez, but
yeah.
I don't hate it. I think the money's right. And honestly, I think, I don't know. I guess I kind of saw it as a good fit. They've been looking for a catcher for a long time. I don't know. Opting out of the deal with the Orioles, he got a little more money, a little more security. Well, do you think it was the right move? I think the fact that he got a multi-year deal probably proves that it was. But should Oriole fans feel spurned that he left for a team that might be worse off than them in the present?
No, I think that the way that the Orioles have their situation with Chance Sisko and Austin Wins and also Caleb Joseph, never really were going to be players for Castillo. So now I think that Orioles fans should be happy with the situation that they have. Dan Duquette came out and said as much last week, maybe a couple weeks ago, and that Castillo did a great job for them of being that one-year stopgap. But right now they're really confident with how their situation is behind the dish.
So they would have been okay with him opting out either way. And if
he, yep,
if he had opted in, it wouldn't have really mattered because it was just, I think, one more year. But it wasn't make or break either way, basically speaking.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive into the 15 guys that we have left on this list. Before we do that, as far as like talent of this top 30, it's, I suppose, I haven't really looked past the first handful of guys next year. But as far as classes, I mean, it doesn't feel overwhelmingly talented, but it's a reasonable crop. You know, how do you rate this crop on the whole?
It's top heavy, I would say. I think after the first I guess 11 or so on my list, there's a pretty steep drop off. You could argue that that happens before the first 11 or so, and then really after the top six. The top six guys are going to get, well, I guess not number one, but two through six is going to get big contracts, and then after that, it's a pretty big drop off, and then even after that, I don't know if that's really atypical, but it's going to be interesting to see what those top guys get, and then how big the drop off is after.
Do you think next year's free agency bounty, that's, I guess it's promising, but it's not guaranteed, do you think that will matter to how guys spend or how teams spend this offseason, with the potential of a Bryce Harper, with the potential of a Manny Machado and a few other guys that are obviously, you know, not that caliber but close? Is that going to, you know, really alter the landscape of this offseason that much?
I don't think it should, because there's so many teams who operate on kind of a year-to-year basis with their payroll. So while some of the bigger market teams might be looking ahead towards the 2018-19 offseason, I think that a lot of these smaller market teams obviously aren't going to be players for Machado and Harper anyway, and thus it's just kind of business as usual for them.
So how much do you think about future payroll commitments when you do these kind of things? So for instance, and obviously the Twins are apt for me to look into, but they only have like $21.2 million committed to next season, plus arbitration raises for a few guys. But that's pretty low. I mean, it's a team that can probably sustain a 115-120 payroll without question every single year. Is that going to play a factor at all? You know, when I look at who the Giants might go after, obviously they're in discussions to try to figure out if they can get Giancarlo Stanton. Do you put too much thought into future payroll considerations, or not that much at all?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, I could have potentially put a lot of different guys on the Phillies, for example, because they just have so much wiggle room for years and years to come. Whereas, you know, if I put one big guy on the Giants, it gives me a lot of pause. I'm not going to really be too nitpicky about it, but it's definitely something to consider.
Okay. Well, let's dive right in. Lance Lynn is number 15 on your list. Dependable righty. I've written about him at a couple different spots. The numbers look good. The secondary stuff a little less so. Not a big swing and miss guy, but respectable swinging strikeout. Strike rates, home run issues in the first half last year, strikeout issues in the second half, flip-flop as far as the positives and negatives from each side. But what do you see as a landing spot for him and contract, and do you think it's bound to be a reasonable deal for him to fulfill?
So I put him on the Rangers, my reason being that they have the single most desperate rotation situation in the league. And
well,
I think
they just signed Doug Fister, right? I mean, if you're prioritizing... What's that?
Right now, he's their number three starter, and you don't want Doug Fister as your number three starter.
But if you prioritize Doug Fister at this point in the offseason, too, I think that speaks to the situation. Fans get tied up in the idea that the first player you go after is the best player you're going to get, or that you have to have a linear pursuit of players. But I do think in this case that Doug Fister was an early priority maybe does speak to the desperation the Texas Rangers are dealing with.
Yeah, I think it could be a little bit of both. It could be they wanted to jump the market, and it could be that they also wanted to, you know, just get one of those spots settled.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he should be their five and not a spot more. I mean, ideally maybe even a swingman, but at this point I think, yeah, you have to consider adding, if not one more good arm, maybe two.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have the Twins signing him, but that's just more a personal preference thing that I'd like to be able to talk to him regularly. You see the YouTube videos. He's pretty hilarious. Is there a chance he could be like the antithesis of the Rick Porcello deal, where he signs at a time where his value is a little bit iffy, and if he pitches like he did early in his career and signs a five-year, $75 million deal, if you give 5 years of what he did before Tommy John surgery, you'd have to be pretty happy with that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that, again, there's risk involved, but I think that the contract that he'll get in a kind of, I don't want to say off-season because the bottom line results were good, but the peripherals were not, you know, contrasted to, let's say, Jeff Samardzija, who got a huge contract after a bad season.
He kind of had an Irvin Santana season when you really look at it.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah, it could be kind of the anti-Rick Porcello, where he's kind of coming into the market at the wrong time, but he could really be a boon for his new team.
I mean, maybe you'd want 4 years and $60 million, right? You're not going to call a five-year pitcher deal a boom necessarily, but, you know, if he hits hits free agency rather than having Tommy John surgery, as though that's an actual option. I mean, maybe at his peak, he's a 5-year, $90 million guy. Is that crazy to say? I mean,
no.
Homer Bailey got that big contract before he got hurt. He's not worse than Homer Bailey when they're both healthy, is he? I mean, are they somewhat similar caliber? I don't know.
Somewhat similar caliber, I think, at their best on a game-to-game basis. I think that Lynn obviously has a greater track record of health, Tommy John surgery aside.
Some pitchers, that's just like a tune-up for a car.
Right.
Not that we should expect it and that it should be done preemptively, but it's now, I don't know if it'd be called settled science, but most guys come back from it almost as good as before.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, going to get overpaid relative to what the market would like to pay him. I think that's always the case. I think he's going to get underpaid relative to how pitchers of similar performance have gotten on the market. I think that 4 years and $60 million, maybe 4 years and $70 million is going to be roughly what he'll get, but I think that in past years he could have gotten a lot more.
Yeah, so it's fair to say it should end better than the Sanchez contract or the Jordan Zimmermann deal will, if in a perfect world, maybe it's a 5-year deal and the first 4 years go well, the fifth year is not okay. But so I think, John, the Lynn situation is that he's very polarizing. Is, you know, you see him kind of like higher up on people's lists, and then I think Keith Law had him. Did he have him lower than Tyler Chatwood for some reason?
I think he did. I think
that to me seems weird. But it might have to do with money. I mean, if you can have Tyler Chatwood for 2-20 or Lance Lynn for 4-60, I mean, maybe that makes sense to me, but I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I think Lynn is better than Chatwood, and I don't really buy into the Chatwood splits away from home because his peripherals are still not particularly good, but I just don't think I could put Chatwood ahead of him in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, so Keith had Chatwood 41 and Lynn 16, so I don't know if it was Keith who...
Who did he have in front of Lynn for pitchers then? Because he had somebody in front of Lynn that did not line up for me.
He had Chassin two spots ahead of him.
Ulysses Chassin, that's right. Which I don't buy. And I think Chassin's fine. I saw him pitch against Irvin Santana, and he diced the Twins pretty good. I think he had like 3 strikeouts in 7 innings or something. But Chassin is fine, don't get me wrong, and all that. But I don't prefer Chassin to Lynn.
Yeah.
Just my 2 cents.
I think that's fair.
Well, let's move on to Greg Holland. We spent a lot of time on Lance Lynn. Greg Holland hitting the market, coming off, I think, a fairly decent season. Seemed like he started strong, finished kind of cold for the Rockies. But, you know, what are you thinking? I mean, is it going to be a robust market? He opted out of a second year that I think was fairly lucrative with the Rockies. I think the hope is that his 1 year of fairly good relief will buy him a multi-year deal. Do you think he overplayed his hand? Did he do okay? And do you think he's going to get a big multi-year deal that he's hoping for?
I think if teams are smart, he probably shouldn't have declined the player option, honestly, or
kind of agree
should have taken the qualifying offer just because of how bad he looked, you know, on the tail end of the season in the wild card game, for example. And I think that I think it wasn't Keith's where Keith had him very low. Keith had him at 32.
Yeah, he really, really did not have a very strong
right
opinion of Holland.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. And I think that it wasn't Keith. It might have been Jeff Passan who said that at this point he's really just a guy with a really good slider that he can't even command, that just throws in the dirt and works often enough. Mm-hmm. But it definitely scares me that, you know, he's looking for a way bigger contract than I think he'll get.
You have him going back to the Rockies. I'm gonna tip your hand a little bit here. I got the Cubs as maybe the flip flop of former Royals closers for them on the north side of Chicago. But what, you know, what's kind of your process? What are you thinking here as far as Holland with the Rockies? I mean, does he sign another 1 year plus deal, you know, with an option or something? Or because I mean, the Rockies had the front row seat to what he did last year and how he went all season long. You know, what's your line of thinking there? Because for me, the Cubs, I mean, they need a closer, and unless they're going to get Wade Davis back, it might be Greg Holland. And I don't think Cubs fans are enthused about that, but here we are.
Yeah, I think the Cubs just strike me as a team who needs a strike thrower, which Holland is not. Even at his best, Holland really wasn't much of one.
Yeah, he's probably not going to give them something that Carl Edwards Jr. couldn't.
Right, and thus I'm wary of putting one of those walk-heavy guys on the Cubs. My thing with the Rockies is that they saw the ups and the downs, and they obviously didn't like the downs, but they're the only team that wouldn't have to give up a draft pick for him, and I think eventually he'll circle back to them.
You know, yeah, if he's getting offered $8 million per year everywhere else, you may as well take the money from the Rockies and a team you're familiar with and most likely comfortable with.
Right.
Well, I like your pick of the Cardinals as another fit. They certainly have had closers that have not not thrown strikes in recent years with, is it Trevor Rosenthal, I think?
Yep.
Has struggled to throw strikes. And yep. So that's an interesting fit. Then it's kind of the other ones are the obvious candidates, Diamondbacks, Nationals, Rangers, all teams looking for relief help. So I don't find Greg Holland's market that compelling, which I think is more, as far as being compelling, I don't know. I don't find him as compelling as even Wade Davis, and I don't find relievers who are in this upper tier all that compelling, to be honest with you.
I agree with you 100%.
So Jonathan Lucroy is next on your list. We can cross the White Sox off. That was your likely fit, but not your best fit.
Yep.
You do have some interesting secondary fits, but ultimately, I, like you, have him going back to Colorado. If we look at Colorado's depth chart right now, they have Tony Walters catching, and I just do not think that's going to work as a starter. I think,
yeah.
Is Walters a good catch and throw guy, decent framer? I know he can't hit.
So he's a good framer, former infielder, so he's very athletic back there.
Yeah, and he was actually a USA U18 player the year Francisco Lindor was, so I saw him play in Minneapolis that year.
He's an above average caught stealing. I think he's an about average framer. So he's a guy that you'd like as a backup, but not a guy that I would just hand the reins to just because he can't hit at all.
Yeah, and so I think Lucroy going back there makes too much sense. As far as secondary fits, though, I don't know what's going to come up between him and the Rockies that would make them not bring him back. But if you think he goes elsewhere, you know, where and why, you know, what makes it a good fit?
I said the A's, if his market drops enough, is kind of a dark horse.
Well, and that's the team we said that Castillo was going to.
Yep.
I frankly don't even know who's going to catch for them right now as it stands.
Right, with the whole Bruce Maxwell situation. Right, I put Mets only because they might not be enthused with their situation, although I think a left-handed hitting catcher might work a little bit better for them.
Yeah, because they got, what's their situation? Darno and...
And Plawecki. So I think maybe, you know, an Alex Avila type to back up-ish start, maybe.
And then play a little first base or something. Mix and match might make sense. Yeah, I think Lucroy to the Rockies is fairly likely at this point. Interestingly enough, we don't have Cleveland on this list. We don't have Milwaukee on this list. We don't have Texas on this list. Yeah, I don't think that... I don't think anybody's going to be circling back to Lucroy after where he's been before. He was awful in Texas. Milwaukee's moving in another direction, and I think Cleveland is pretty solid behind the plate. So I think that one's pretty easy. Jay Bruce is going to be a fun one. It's going to be, he's perpetually, it feels like, making more money than I would expect a guy like that to make, and asking for more money than a guy like that should make. I don't know. I get this overwhelming sense of boredom from Jay Bruce right now, which is weird because he was such an uber prospect like a decade ago, but I just do not find Jay Bruce at all compelling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like him particularly either. The power's good. I'm not at all enthused by Jay Bruce. Basically, he has one tool left, which is right-handed.
He hits righties?
Masher, yeah, he hits righties. Righty masher, that's about it. And he hits righties well. I'll give him that. But... yeah, I wouldn't give him much at all. He's definitely one of those guys that I just kind of circle back to towards the end.
So you have the Blue Jays. I have the Rockies. I don't know. I mean, right now the Rockies outfield has Ian Desmond at left field and first base on their depth chart, and Gerardo Parra in right. Why am I missing? Blackman in center. So you could find room for Jay Bruce in right. I don't think Parra is particularly good, but he could play left, and you could put Desmond at first base. Not really enthused about that, but hey, Bruce's power in Colorado could be a lot of fun.
It could, yeah, and I think definitely he'd be best in a park that maximizes that.
Now you have Toronto. What was their right field production was awful, just awful. I think it was actually the worst right field production in baseball, if my mind is right here.
Yeah, I mean, they've been connected to him every year for years, and now that there's no real need for them to bring Bautista back, nor should they, there's a good enough fit there. I think that they would like to give Teoscar Hernandez a look, but that could also be in left field with Steve Pierce as a platoon partner for Jay Bruce.
Yeah, I think that's a good fit. Moving on to, back to the infield dirt, Zach Cozart. Weird year for Cozart, obviously not offensively inclined previously in his career like now, but, obviously a big season for the Reds with the quote-unquote juiced baseball. You do have the Reds on his list as a potential reunion, but not as the best fit. When you're breaking down fits for Cozart, I suspect you kind of maybe did what I did, which was look at who didn't get shortstop production among semi-contenders last year, but I think your fit is is interesting. I have an interesting one as well, but I want to hear about your process for Zach Cozart.
It's tough because there's so few teams looking for a shortstop that I kind of just had to settle on the Royals. Again, you know, some of the bottom of the top 30 guys are guys like Morrison and Carlos Gomez that I pitched to them. I thought it fit to kind of get some of the mid-lower tier guys to try to make one last run at contending without bringing back one of their top three guys. So that was my thinking. You know, Cozart still gets to play for a contender, but there aren't any like definite these teams are going to make the postseason that are in the need of a shortstop.
So I said Baltimore Orioles, they're going to need to quote-unquote replace J.J. Hardy. And I do think that they want Machado to play third. I don't think Machado's going to play short or anything like that. So I don't know. Is Baltimore crazy if you are thinking about teams for a fit for Zach Cozart?
No, because I actually read yesterday or maybe today John Heyman's notes column. He said that Dan Duquette is sold on Tim Beckham as a starting shortstop, but Buck Showalter is not. So.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of Beckham. I don't know why I missed Beckham. That trade definitely happened, and I don't know why I'm forgetting it. But, okay, so that probably does make it less of an ideal fit, but I still think they could make it work between that if they have Beckham, you know, coming off the bench as a utility guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have options. So next up on your list, we must be getting close to the top 10 here. Wade Davis, closer, coming off a fairly good season with the Cubs, but I feel like not the earth-shattering, life-changing closer he used to be is. Is that pretty much where you're at, too?
Yeah, you know, being a Cubs fan, having seen a lot of him pitch, he was shaky at times, and thus, you know, that led to some outings where you just kind of wanted to cover your eyes and hope it was over. Mm-hmm. Mainly in the walks department, I mean, he was still stingy and not allowing hits, not allowing many runs, striking a lot of guys out, but it's the walks that were really concerning, just the fact that there were some outings where he was completely devoid of command, and it was just kind of pure stuff that got him out of it. That being said, his ability to just completely kind of, I guess, emotionally command an inning, no matter what kind of situation he got in, the poise was there, makes him a very, very appealing option for really anyone in need of a closer.
And you put the Cardinals, I put the Rockies, basically a closer swap between the Rockies and Cubs for me. But really, I tend to agree, any team looking for a closer, Nationals, again, bang that drum nonstop because they're going to need relief help. Cubs, Rockies, there's a lot of good fits for a guy like Wade Davis. Again, I don't think it's all that compelling of a free agent market. I found Kenley Jansen much more at least interesting.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess that's my way of saying I'm not all that invested in where Wade Davis lands, but it's going to be a spot where he can make a difference in a bullpen that's going to need help. And right. I think Cardinals are a good fit. I think Rockies are a good fit.
Yep, absolutely. I think, you know, obviously wherever he signs is going to be the closer. It's just a matter of who's willing to pony up the money. He'll probably get a Melanson-ish contract, which, you know, isn't Jansen or Chapman, but it has its risks for sure.
So that was your number 10 free agent. Now we are inside 10. Mike Moustakas coming over from the hot corner, Kansas City. You do list the Royals as a fit. If you were to be a betting man, where would you need the over-under for a percentage to be for him to return the Royals for you to feel comfortable betting? Is it 10%, 25%? Is it way less than that?
I'd give it a pretty decent shot. I'd say 25, 30%
chance
he returns to them, if only because he might just be the cheapest of the three. And I think the power breakout is something that maybe the Royals will value more than some other teams.
So hypothetically, if you could re-sign one of Moustakas or Hosmer as the Royals, who are you picking? Because see, I'm picking Moustakas because of position valuability. The fact that it's easier to replace first base and third base, in my opinion, I can't prove that. Just based on how I see the league, I think you could find a first baseman a lot easily, more easily and more cheaply, as we've seen.
Yeah, I think I'd still rather Hosmer, if only because Moustakas kind of lost that elite third base fielding ability post ACL surgery. Now if he has that back, I'd rather Moustakas, but right now he's kind of a pretty well below average third baseman.
Yeah, I guess you have to worry about him having to move to first base someday, and then you don't have on base percentage, and
right.
Then he's just kind of blah at first base.
Yeah,
so that's,
yeah.
That is something to think about. Okay, so if you could only sign two of three between Hosmer, Kane, and Moustakas, and you're the Royals, who do you leave out?
I would probably leave out Hosmer, only because his market is probably going to drive his price beyond comfortability.
Yeah.
And I think it's very possible that Lorenzo Cain will actually get underpaid. We'll get to him later. Mike Moustakas, I think, should get roughly around what he's worth.
Do you feel strongly, though, that any of those guys will end back in Kansas City? Like, obviously you did actually pick one of them. I won't spoil it for you. But as far as, like, do you have strong conviction that the Royals will get any of these guys back?
No, I really don't.
Because yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, too.
The way that their payroll is, I think it will take, we'll get to that later with who I predicted them to sign, but I think that
they'll chew up a significant part of their payroll.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's going to take luck. It really is.
They're probably going to bring back Alcides Escobar or something too, which just does nothing for me. So Moustakas, I have going to the Angels. You have going to the Angels. Can they really put forth the sort of money he's going to get with Trout and Pujols on their payroll? And does it make sense with any of their other holes? I mean, they perpetually have four starting pitchers on the disabled list, and they still almost made the playoffs. In fact, the Twins had to basically elbow them out of the postseason in the last week. But as far as a fit, as far as money and all that, do you feel like the Angels are really the number one team?
If only because they have the most glaring need at third base, yes. Otherwise, really, no. But, you know, as bad as that sounds, it's not a great fit just based on, I think more than anything, really where their pitching is right now. They'd probably be better off putting money there. But at the same time, they've said that they're going to prioritize their offense for some reason.
Well, you have the Giants on your list too. That'd be a pretty handsome left side of the infield with him and Brandon Crawford, would it not?
It would.
I mean, that's something to think about. The cream-colored Giants uniforms with that field backdrop and two guys looking like that on the left side, I mean, that's aesthetics, man.
And I think, you know, aesthetics aside, they're probably a better fit for him, but with where they are with Stanton right now and kind of potentially maybe close-ish to getting him, maybe if he waives his no-trade clause, I didn't want to predict a big signing to them.
True. Although, you know, maybe they can still make it work with a big signing and him. I mean, it's weird because their payroll has been high in the past, and, you know, there are some they do have some obligations with Melanson and all that that are iffy or shaky at best, but I do think that they can make some things work financially. And I think I wrote on my my zone coverage offseason preview of the 12 things I expected to happen that the Giants would be movers and shakers, and they would not treat this offseason like they were the second worst team in baseball. So if they were to land Moustakas, I think that would make sense. It also wouldn't be that stupid for them to go after Eduardo Nunez and bring him back.
No, not at all.
Help at third and then second if they have to move Panic, or if they move Panic and don't get D. Gordon back. The Giants are going to be fascinating next year because they already have Samardzija, Bumgarner, and Cueto in place. That's 3/5 of a pretty darn good rotation.
Yeah, the pieces are there for the Giants. Just a matter of how are they going to be able to allocate their money in such a way where they can just really recover from that horrendous season, especially relative to expectations.
Yeah, exactly. No dirt bikes. Carlos Santana, next up on your list. I think underrated, but not in a way where I would put him higher and feel good about it. I just think he's a fairly safe proposition on a 3-year deal. I wouldn't give him 4. But I have him going to the Twins as well, but that's more of me wish casting because that's another guy I want to watch play every day. But you have him going back to Cleveland. Really, for a likely fits, dark horses, he's a good fit for a lot of clubs.
Yeah, and I put him back on the Indians only because I don't see how they could let him go with what he means to them.
Especially for the cost, too. I mean, if it's a reasonable deal, then they should probably be able to match it. It's more about if he goes off and gets he reminds me a little bit of Shin-Soo Choo at the plate as far as discipline and batting average. And, you know, Choo got that huge deal from the Rangers, and you have the Rangers on the list. But if he's not going to get away for $100 million, if it's more like $50 million, I think it would make sense to just bring him back. And again, like you said, he means a lot to that team. I don't know what they do without him.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I'm thinking. I think he'd fit on just about any AL team, but, you know, the Indians are going to make a very strong push, and I think he's comfortable there.
Do you really feel safe with him as far as, like, he would be the target for every team as far as not having to worry about overspending or wasting money?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's always that bust potential, but I'm more confident in him than I am in probably really anyone above him on the list, even, you know, outside of Ohtani and being worth what they're paid.
Well, and Martinez, too, I think you said you liked a lot, but at the cost, his contract is going to be twice as expensive than Martinez in terms of total dollars. So I think that certainly makes it easier to justify Santana. And I think teams are going to sign Santana, they're going to sign Logan Morrison, maybe even Yonder Alonso, miss out on Hosmer, and maybe be glad they did. Yep. Again, now, with that said, if Hosmer elevates a little bit, then he's maybe better than JD Martinez. We just don't know. But it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yep, exactly.
Next up, you have Alex Cobb. Alex Cobb, the Cub, we both said, but I think the Cubs make perfect sense for him. They need a little back-end help, middle to back-end help. That means they don't need to rely on him too heavily. But at the same time, too, obviously some familiarity with Theo Epstein in the AL East, and that's before considering, oh yeah, the guy pitched for Joe Maddon. So I think that's a pretty easy fit there.
Yeah, and I we've heard so many connections, and not just, you know, with the pitching coach Jim Hickey, with manager Joe Maddon, but just the fact that Cobb would like to go there for that reason, and the Cubs are looking for starting pitching. I mean, it's really a perfect fit to me, honestly.
And you said you have confidence he'll get back the changeup. I think that makes sense. I don't know. I know when Mike Pelfrey had Tommy John, he was telling me he was having trouble with feel for his secondary pitches, and so it wouldn't surprise me. He said it was in his fingertips. If a changeup artist doesn't have that, I could see that being an issue. The other thing, too, if you look at his usage, I think he was aware he didn't have that changeup because he threw it about half as much as he had before. And if you don't have a pitch, you are going to steer away from it. And I think that's why with more fastballs, just fewer strikeouts. You're not going to strike people out with a fastball like that. So I do think he's on the upswing and will be good provided he stays healthy.
Yeah, I think that you're correct with that. And, you know, I think as he continues to just regain his health, you know, as time, just by virtue of time, I think he'll get better.
So hotly contested guy next up on the list. If you've been following Casey Stern of MLB Network Radio, there's been a raging battle about who is better, this guy or the existing guy on the team that I think he's going to sign with. It's Eric Hosmer. You have him going back to Kansas City, spoiler alert. I have him going to St. Louis. And the battle that Casey has been waging on Twitter, and I think also on his program on MLB Network Radio, has been whether or not Hosmer is an upgrade on Matt Carpenter. First of all, what are your thoughts on that debate? And second of all, you have the Cardinals as a likely fit. Carpenter could move over to third, could he not?
Right, yeah. I don't think it would be, now you have to trade Carpenter because you've signed Hosmer. And I think I take Carpenter over Hosmer just because Carpenter, one of the best batting guys in the game, probably right between Votto and Santana, honestly.
Yep.
And he's got a track record of consistency that Hosmer just doesn't have. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, Hosmer is 4 years younger. So long term, I probably take Hosmer. But right now, I think I'm still taking Carpenter.
So you think he's going back to the Royals. Is he getting $100 million in that case?
Yes, but barely. I think that's kind of where...
Five and 105 or six, yeah, and 120? Well, I mean,
yeah,
whereabouts?
Five, 105, 5, 110. That kind of thing. Definitely not what some people have settled at, you know, 160, 180, approaching 200. I think that's ridiculous. And I think it's going to be a matter of teams are going to fill first base vacancies in other ways, and he's just going to circle back to the Royals.
Do you think he signs before guys like Logan Morrison and Yonder Alonso or after? I have to say it'd be before, but...
Yeah, I think before. I think teams are just going to express lack of interest, not necessarily by signing Morrison and Alonso and Santana, but just by, you know, not willing to meet his price.
So we're down to the final five. Jake Arrieta is number five on your list. Obviously an intriguing arm. Came out today that Joe Maddon is not particularly enthused about the team's chances of re-signing him. And so in that sense, an Arrieta for Cobb swap might not really push the needle forward much. Although with that said, Arrieta on the downswing, Cobb possibly on the upswing, it might not make much of a difference. But it does still leave the Cubs looking to fill another spot that would be with someone other than maybe Mike Montgomery. I have him going to the Rangers because of the desperation they need. I think they can spend some money. And then, you know, Cole Hamels and Jake Arrieta atop a rotation. Two guys whose stars are maybe fading a little bit, but that's still a pretty good rotation.
Yeah, and I think I did have the Rangers as a likely fit. I picked the Brewers only because I think that they're going to try to do something to just keep, you know, making up ground with the Cubs, and they have a lot of money to spend.
Yeah, it's I think there's a lot of fits though. So Milwaukee is your pick for Arrieta. I think I see it. I know Keith Law doesn't like it, but you know, I don't know. What's your thoughts on him going to play for the Crew?
I think that especially with the Jimmy Nelson situation, they're going to have to make a splash in the starting pitching market, and I think they'll want to make a little bit shorter of a commitment, which Arrieta will get relative to Darvish, and a little bit less money also.
Yeah, not a terribly interesting free agency to me. Maybe it should be compelling, but I'm just, I don't know. With a guy trending this far down over 3 years, I know he could swing back up easily at age 32, but I think it might keep some teams out and depress his market a little bit to the point where we are talking 3 or 4 years instead of 6 or 7. And, you know, with a guy that level of talent, I don't know. It just, I don't know. I think there's a chance he makes an upswing and finds something that works for him, but I just don't know that he's going to be a Cy Young contender again. Moving on, yeah. we have Lorenzo Cain, center field. You have him going to the Giants. I have him going to the Giants. Was that a pretty easy decision for you?
It was pre-Stanton stuff happening. Now it seems like it would be very tough for them to commit that kind of money after acquiring Stanton. If Stanton doesn't happen, it'll be Cain, I think. Otherwise, plenty of options for Cain. I think he's a really, really great player who should age pretty well just because of his athleticism. He'll have a lot of suitors, but I just really like the Giants as they look to get younger, more athletic.
What do you think that contract will look like?
It's tough because he's an interesting case in that he's older than you think he is.
I mean, is it 3 years and $60 million?
That's what I would do. I wouldn't be surprised if it's more like 4 or 75 or so
a little bit lower. And a little more money, but a little less per year.
Yep. But I think you should get a 4-year deal. I'd rather give him 3, but yeah, I think we're about right in that range.
Royals probably not in the mix then. I mean, I know you know it's a fit, but I just don't.
I don't think so. I think, well, he won't get as large of a contract as Hosmer. There'll be more people vying for Cain who might just be able to sell him on it a little bit better.
Well, we're down to the big three with a few minutes left here. Yu Darvish coming off a tough stretch in the World Series, but for the most part was decent with the Dodgers, has had some success with the Rangers. You have all the teams he's ever pitched for on your list, which is obviously not that many, but I see Dodgers, you see Dodgers. I think the money makes the most sense here. I also think if they don't get Stanton, which we haven't really heard anything about, they are going to want to make a splash this offseason. It's weird to call this a splash, but it was a fairly big 11th hour splash to get him, you know, in the first place, trading Willie Calhoun plus more. I think back to the Dodgers just makes too much sense.
Yeah, and I think that they shouldn't really care how he did in the World Series. You know, it was 2 starts, and ultimately they're a great fit for him. They have the money, and like we talked about yesterday, he's more of a number two than a number one. So with Kershaw, he'd fit right in right behind him.
Yep, and I think that you still have Rich Hill on a deal that's not that crazy, Alex Wood. I mean, they're starting five. I mean, they could have a starting five on the disabled list and still have 5 guys who can win ball games for you.
Exactly.
So I really do think the Dodgers are a great fit there. Number two, you have J.D. Martinez. Lots of suitors likely for him. What was your process for trying to figure out who he would sign with before you divulge who you have him signing with? What are you looking for in terms of a fit?
It's weird because the best fit doesn't have money to spend, really, but I'm looking for money to spend. I'm looking for a spot open in the outfield, obviously, and I'm looking for a history of risk-taking by that team's regime, because as good as Martinez is as a hitter and as good as his track record is as a hitter for the past 4 years, he does have that injury history, number one, and number two, his fielding has just gotten worse year to year with a slight uptick back to slightly below average this past season. That being said, I picked the Diamondbacks.
Well, they've accepted some bad fielding from like Yasmani Tomas, in addition to the fact that they've got some guys who also can catch it. Gerardo Parra used to be a pretty good corner outfielder for them back in the day, but they had Jason Kubel. They've had some bad corner outfielders, so it's not unprecedented.
Yeah, and the issue is that they have very little money to spend, but I feel like they're going to need to make that splash. He was huge for them after they acquired him, and I think he loved playing there, loved hitting there, obviously, and I wouldn't be surprised if he took something of a discount to return.
So I don't know how we're going to make it happen, but I have the Red Sox. I know they're stocked. I mean, maybe he DHs and Hanley plays first. Maybe he plays right, Betts plays center, and they trade Jackie Bradley for Jose Abreu. Again, I've seen that poo-pooed and I've seen that pushed by a number of different sides. I don't know. I just feel like I can't imagine an offseason going by without the Red Sox doing something fairly big. And maybe that's it. Not on your list, but what do you think of that fit?
Yeah, so with the way that the Red Sox are, with the way that Dave Dombrowski is, it wouldn't shock me at all. It's just the way that their lineup is structured, a lot of righties. Bradley and Devers and Benintendi being the three lefties, and one of them would probably have to get pushed out if they were to acquire Martinez, then it's not a great fit for me, but again, you never know with Dave Dombrowski.
Yeah, he's kind of throw caution to the wind. Also was the guy who acquired him in the first place, if I'm not mistaken. So
yep.
There are some fits there. All right, that brings us to number one, the crown jewel of this free agent situation, I guess. Shohei Ohtani posted as of Friday, December 1st, which means we should know who he signs with or where he'll wind up within...
3 weeks from today, I believe. Is 3 weeks from today. Yeah.
So... Yeah, your likely fits are everyone, your dark horses are everyone. You do have a best fit. How strong is your conviction in this team, and who is it?
So it's the Mariners. It's not strong at all. I almost consider just picking out of a hat.
Right.
But ultimately, I'll pick the Mariners just because they've got a big enough market. But, you know, from what I read on Ohtani, he doesn't want to really be in the spotlight. He lives in a dorm, sends all of his money to his parents, doesn't go out if there's alcohol present. So, you know, big enough market, but, you know, Seattle's, you know, is still pretty quiet. And he may or may not want to play somewhere where there is an established Japanese star, but there was an established Japanese star. So that might be what he wants, you know, familiarity, good Japanese community there. And doesn't have to follow in Ichiro's footsteps necessarily at all, but can be kind of the second coming, so to speak.
I agree with that. I think they're a good fit. I have the Dodgers. I just think, again, if there's a place that people want to play, you know, it would be all that stadium noise would be kind of reminiscent of the chants and all that they play with and all that. I don't know. I can't rule out the Dodgers when it comes to any personnel pursuit. I know they don't have the ability to really offer much, but it doesn't really matter at this point. I don't know. It's hard for me to go away from the Dodgers or the Yankees, but if he doesn't sign with the Mariners, is there any other teams you're like, yeah, that makes sense?
You know, the Yankees have been tossed around. I don't really see them as a great fit just because it's a really overwhelming environment. They're going to have a new manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of big ifs there. I like the idea of a rebuilding team like the Padres could offer him a lot more in terms of playing time than other teams could. Can be a lot more experimental, can take more risks as long as there's not markedly more injury risk. So I think I like the rebuilding team a lot as an idea.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, John, thank you for your time. I know you got other stuff to get to, but thanks for carving out some time here before you finish up that first semester and head home for the holidays. Hope all is well with you, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Awesome.
You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.